Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Well, we're planning to talk today about antiques and collectibles on the program with our guest, Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser, owner of Heirloom Appraisal Services. We're having some trouble reaching her at the moment. That's, you know how that goes. Sometimes we have technical difficulties, and, you know, when those difficulties come, we just kind of roll with the punches. So I think we're going to be going to an evergreen program today. Or no? Tell you what, we will take a break here, and I think we'll have her with us. I think she's coming right now. So I'll tell you what, we'll give you a chance to think about a collectible. What I wanted to talk with her about to begin the program with was books, antique books, because there's, and, you know, we all probably have a few of those. I know I have a few of those sitting in my library collection at home. Those relate to the Civil War, some of the oldest ones, but that's not really very old. And so I doubt that I've got anything that is going to bring me any money if I'm looking for some extra money. I wouldn't part with them anyway. But I tell you what, if you have an idea, maybe you've got a collectible you want to talk about, we could do that. You know, the other thing we could do while we're waiting to reach Shirley is to have a bit of an open line, because there are always programs out there. I get a lot of emails and a lot of notes from people. Hey, can we do this? Can we do that on your show? And I try to follow up on them, and we do follow them for sure as often as we can. So while we're waiting for Shirley, let's try an open line on programs that you would like to see on the Larry Mueller Show. What do you think of that? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. And in the background, people are frantically working on getting all this resolved with Shirley, and I'm hoping that we'll have a chance to talk with her. But if you've got an idea for a program, why don't you give me a call right now? I've got my pen ready, and I am ready to take your suggestions. So again, the number is 1-800-642-1234, or you can email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Love to hear from you. Tomorrow, I was thinking about tomorrow's program, because tomorrow we're going to talk about track and field to begin the show, if I'm not mistaken. And my daughter's a high jumper in college, so track and field is something that appeals to me. And then we're going to talk about the Masters Golf Tournament a bit. And not everybody golfs, but a lot of people watch the Masters Golf Tournament. And a lot of non-golfers, it's the one show, it's the one golf tournament where if you're not a golfer, you still are likely to watch it. So that's what we'll be talking about right now. Kim in North America, though, somewhere in North America, has something for us. So let's go there. Hi, Kim.
Hi. Yeah, I'm from Pell Lake, Wisconsin. I was actually calling in to discuss the value of the collectibles.
Yeah.
Not the future show, I'm sorry. So I was thinking Precious Moments. Those used to be the big thing, you know, bigger than the Beanie Babies. So I was just wondering, you know, what the value of those were nowadays.
You know what? I'm going to write that down, Kim, once we get Shirley, I'll ask her about Precious Moments.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
You bet.
I was thinking just yesterday, was telling somebody we had this program on, and they said, well, I have some Matchbox cars, and I have one. This is an older guy, and he says, I have one of the original first editions of the Matchbox car. And I thought, I'm going to ask Shirley about that. I actually looked up the biggest prices or the highest prices for Matchbox cars. I never collected them myself. But you could get, according to online, a Matchbox car, there's one out there that you could get $13,500 for. So, and those cars are like, what, 2 inches long or something like that? They're not very long. We got Shirley Bauman with us now. Shirley, hi. Thanks for coming in. Glad that we were able to get things straightened out so we could get you on the air.
Yeah, hi, Larry. It's nice to talk to you, and I'm glad we got it worked out, too.
Well, you know, I wanted to, let's just, Kim had called and wondered about precious moments. She said that used to be a big deal.
Right.
And she's wondering if they're worth anything right now.
The answer to that is pretty much no. those are, unfortunately, a modern-made collectible.
Yeah.
Like Beanie Babies and the rest of those things. And they're worth thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, I don't know how many made.
Yeah.
And so now the popularity went down because the serious collectors had them all they wanted. And then something else came along. And now there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of them out there. So they are too new to be appreciating yet. I don't know if maybe in another lifetime, you know, maybe when they become 100 years old, they might be valuable when more of them break so that the rarity increases.
Well, I'll be long gone.
No, they're pretty tough sell these days.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. I did want to talk to you about books, though.
Yeah.
You know, we all have books around the house.
Yeah.
You've got an old one. How do you tell if it's valuable?
Well, there's a couple of things about that. Mostly it's based on rarity, condition, and demand. Okay, rarity means there's not all that many out there and available. Condition, it speaks for itself, but demand is important. So say there was a book that a small print run was made. That book will always be rare. But it wasn't popular then. It wasn't in demand because it just didn't make it. It wasn't popular. It's still not going to be popular today. But if there's a small run and then the book later became popular, then those that first rare printing might be important. First editions are important. That means the first printing, the date the book was first published. You know, the first edition is important. But, unfortunately, that's even hard to determine sometimes because collectors and publishers can sometimes use different terms, use the term differently. Collectors, to them, it's the very first version of the physical book. But some publishers might put first edition on, say, the first hardcover edition and the first paperback printing. So you've got to, you know, there's a lot that goes into determining it.
But if you had a first edition of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet signed by Bill Shakespeare himself,
you would have something really special and you'd want to call a professional.
Oh, my gosh. But if it was signed Bill Shakespeare, I would think it was a fake.
Exactly. There's a lot that goes into it. The signatures on a book can make a difference, not only the author, but later the illustrator, if it turned out to be a famous artist.
Oh.
But then you need to get those signatures authenticated.
Yeah, and so, that can be a problem.
That can be, but there are people that do that, people that specialize in individual signatures or autographs, and they can determine that. Especially you'd want to do that if you think you had a really, really valuable, important signature on it. I have a colleague out on the East Coast in New Jersey who specializes in books and manuscripts. And, I mean, he's one of the guys who appraised the Nixon Watergate papers. He's top of the line. So if I need to go to somebody, that's who I go to.
What about, so, you know, yeah, what about dust jackets?
Oh, they can be so important. You know, the modern dust jacket with the flaps around the book was developed in the 1890s and became really into use about, you know, 1900 or the early 1900s. So before that, the dust jacket actually sealed the whole book shut. So they had to be torn.
Oh. So
these modern dust jackets are so important and in good condition. Today, a modern dust jacket, oh, let's say a Faulkner, Hemingway, Fitzgerald, if you had the appropriate dust jacket to that book in great condition, it might increase the value of the book up to 20 times.
Wow.
And even if it wasn't in perfect condition, it could be 5, 10, you know, 20 times.
Wow.
So you want to watch those dust jackets. Some people, you know, even if you have just a dust jacket of a valuable book, it can be valuable in its own right because there's somebody out there that has the book without the dust jacket. So they're trying to buy the dust jacket to match the book.
Jill in Cross Plains has a question about a book. Let's go there. Jill, hi.
Hi, Larry.
Hi.
Thanks for having me. We inherited a copy of Julia Child's French Cooking, first edition, and it does have the jacket, but it is a bit worn. So I'm wondering what that might be worth.
Well, you know, the short answer is it'll be worth whatever somebody will buy, will pay for it. That's the first edition. And I don't know off the top of my head, but you do have something that probably does warrant looking into. Let me see.
Taking a look there and...
Yeah, now there's lots of... tell you. I think her first book might have been called Mastering the Art of French Cooking.
It's possible.
I'm not sure.
Jill, Jill, do you have the title? What's the title of the book?
I believe that is the title. I'm driving right now, so I can't pull it off.
Okay. You know, you can go to some of these websites. One of them that I use often is called ABE Books, which stands for American Book Exchange, abebooks.com. And they've got one, Mastering the Art of French Cooking, as high as $700. And some are $200, $700, that kind of thing. But you've got to check when you go to these websites, and there's many of them out there, a number of them, and we can mention those as we go through the time here. But, again, you've got to make sure that everything is the same. There are first edition first printings, first edition second printings. This one that I'm looking at that they're trying to sell for $700, it says it's the 18th printing of the first edition. So it's really important that you look at all of those things. And there's a lot of information on the internet about these kinds of things. So you just need to take a little time and do your research. But ABE Books is the one I go to first when I'm trying to research a book. But there's many more, but that's a good place to go. The publisher has to be the same, the publication date, the binding, the illustration, the cover art condition, again, dust jacket or not, signed by the author. This one that I'm saying is $700 was signed by the author. So that would make it more valuable than one that is not signed by the author. So they can go, you know, one in poor condition that's not a first edition might go for $20.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think my copy of it, Jill, would go for $10 probably. It's kind of beat up and used, and it was definitely not a first edition. Oh, man.
Yeah.
Shirley Baumann, our guest today. Shirley, a certified personal property appraiser, owner of Heirloom Appraisal Services. Our guest on the show as we talk antiques and collectibles. We've zeroed a bit on books, but we'll take other questions as well. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at antiques and collectibles today on the show, zeroing in a bit on books, but other questions as well with our guest Shirley Baumann, owner of Heirloom Appraisal Services. Lots of callers online. Let's take a call from Lee in Cudahy next. Hi, Lee.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a book that I got at an estate sale, and it's called World Famous Paintings, and it's edited by Rockwell Kent, and its copyright is 1939. By the William H. Wise and Company, and it's printed in the United States of America. And it's a heavy book. It's like the old-time Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got pictures and painters is in the first page then. And it's got portrait of Doug Lauriendo and Giovanni Bellanti. And then it's got, like, the plate numbers. And there's got to be 100 pictures, and they're all these old-time pictures that you see in museums.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know what it's worth, but I got it at an estate sale.
Okay, well, one of the things, as we were talking about, is you want to look at that and see if it is actually a first edition. Obviously, it sounds like the artist are not from the time, you know, are from a previous time period, or they wouldn't be in this book. You know, they have to be earlier than the publishing date. But you want to look at the publishing date, the copyright date, and see if they match. They should match for a first edition. Sometimes they'll have the words, actually, first edition on that copyright page. But if on the copyright page, it might say published and have a number of dates, that indicates that it was published many times, and you would have the last publishing of it. So you need to look at that. And then there's also the print run number, actually. And this is a sequence of numbers. Most people don't know this. A lot of people have the idea about the first edition, but the print run is often something that people don't know about. It's a set of numbers, a sequence, and it's usually in descending or sometimes alternating order, but in descending order from 10 to 1. And let's say we've got the list that goes 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, and then it ends. That would indicate it's the sixth printing. If it ended at 3, it would be the third printing, but if it ended at 1, it should be the first printing. So that list of numbers, that's just there, and the uneducated person wouldn't have any idea what those numbers mean, uneducated to books. I'm not rare books. But that's what that is. So you want to look at the edition and the printing. So it depends, again, is that a book that's in demand? Are there a lot of people looking for that book? That's when people will pay money for it. It becomes demand. You know, we can have a book that seems really important to us, but other people aren't that interested in it, so then it's not valuable.
Yeah.
So you want to go to one of those websites. I mentioned ABA Books, Alibris, Alibris.com is another one you might look. And they have the ability there. Some of them have really great search engines. And you can put in the title, the author, the publishing date, the publisher's name. It asks for all kinds of information that you can put into their search engines, and they will bring up information about that particular book. And often it's what either those books are selling for today, which gives you a value estimate. You know, I here in Madison, Wisconsin, might not be able to sell the same book for the same amount of money as they can sell it for at Christie's Auction House or Sotheby's. So you've got to take that into account. They're going nation and sometimes worldwide for these things. So, but it gives you an idea if it's a valuable book.
Yeah.
That's how you go about it.
That's how you do it, Lee. Thank you for calling. Appreciate it. We had a listener in Madison email to ask if you have any idea of the value of a copy of 1931 book, Game Survey of the North Central States, and it's signed by the author, Aldo Leopold.
Ah, and that's a well-known name there. Now, I'm not sure off the top of my head if that's a first edition book or not, but it might be. Even if it's not, it might be that the signature itself, basically as an autograph, has value, even if it's not a first edition book. Again, Stein books by him. And I would think his... You know, could be his signature might looks like it runs between $75, $100.
Just for the signature.
His book with a signature, it doesn't have to be the first edition. But, you know, a first edition with his signature, I'm seeing a Sand County Almanac, they're asking $17,000. Now, that's an asking price. Anybody could ask a million or whatever they wanted. But you want to do the research looking at several of these sites and find out the average kind of, price it's going for. The lowest one might be in not very good condition. The highest one might be somebody who's just trying to see what might happen, or it might be so rare and pristine that it commands a really high price.
Hmm. Go ahead.
Give you an exact number, but that's where you go to look. But it's worth taking the time to look it up.
Michelle in Madison, your turn. Hi, Michelle.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a question about Fiesta. I have a huge collection of original Fiesta. I've been collecting for 50 years. Plates, bowls, serving pieces, mugs, cups. I needed to downsize the house, and I need to sell it. I don't need advice about how much. I just don't know how to get rid of it. And I wonder if you have advice.
Mm-hmm.
And for your listeners, Fiesta Ware is dinnerware, and it was made by the Homer Laughlin Company, and it's the ones you see in very bright colors, blues and oranges, yellow, green, solid colors, not printed. And they were remade a while back. Why the caller said it was an original set. And I have to say that all of the dinnerware is lower in value than it was even 10, 15 years ago. It's just something that's a lower value, valued item right now. But Fiesta Ware is still popular. I know people who have big collections and want to keep adding more. And sometimes you even see them as decorations in restaurants because they're so eye-catching and they're bright, bold colors and interesting shapes, like especially for the pitchers and some of those serving pieces. What I would do to sell them is start looking around online, search for an auction house that has had success selling them. And today, that could be a local auctioneer who specializes or is doing online auctions with the couple of years of COVID and not being able to hold live auctions. A lot of them went to online. That gets you to a national audience. And I'm not talking about selling on eBay necessarily, but an auctioneer whose work, you know, is selling antiques, collectibles online. And they have learned how to market specific items like Fiestaware or whatever it might be, and have created a following of online customers. And that's the way I would go about it. And I'm not sure where the caller is located, but if you have someone kind of close to you, that's great, because they might be able to come to your place and take photographs of them right where they sit in your china cabinet or shelves at home.
And she's in Madison, and she's
okay.
Yeah.
You'll be able to find someone.
I think that's good advice.
Yeah.
Michelle?
Just get it on that national marketplace.
Yeah, good advice. I always liked Fiestaware. It's so, they're fun. They're just fun. Oh, that for sure. Thanks, Michelle. Appreciate it. Marilyn in Fond du Lac. Hi, Marilyn.
Thank you for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a little book. It's the story of Little Black Sambo, American edition, and by Bannerman, published by Lippincott. And there's a number at the bottom. It's TR dot edition. So I don't know what that means. And I'm just wondering if that's anything.
One of the things that's telling you is that it's not a first edition. It's a specialty edition that came later as it became popular, and somebody decided they were going to do it for whatever reason, a special edition on that. Now, it's possible some of those special editions have some value. The first edition will have the most, but you want to go to one of those sites that didn't enter those names and numbers. But it's definitely not a first edition. And Black Sambo has gone up and down in value different times throughout its history. I'm not sure. I don't think it's at a real high right now, but it's certainly worth taking a look and putting it into one of those sites like ABA Books or Bauman Rare Books. Not got nothing to do with me. That's not even spelled the same as my name, but that, a book finder. And put in those numbers and the edition date and all of that, and it'll give you a lot of good information.
Marilyn, thank you for calling. Let's go to Chris in Wabino. Hi, Chris.
Hello, how you doing today? I have a six-pack of beer. It's about 30 years old. It was when the Wisconsin Badgers went to the Rose Bowl, and the manufacturer never got permission to produce the beer, so most of it was recalled and destroyed. But I have a six-pack of it, and it's never been opened. It's still in the carrying case. Is it worth anything?
Well, yeah, it's probably worth a little, not an awful lot. It's worth something to Badger collectors, and it's a cross collectible with beer collectors. Brewiana is a big collectible area, and sports is as well. But I think you just as much you'd have just as much luck getting the value of it in the Brewiana collectible area, because even like as we were talking books before, if we had books that had a printing error, that would be might be valuable. Many years ago, I sold a single beer can. It was a cone top beer can, but it was from a brewery called Ziegler's, which was in Beaver Dam. It's defunct, and this can was produced but never even filled. Never used, so it was pristine. And that single beer can, cone top, very old can, went for, $875.
Wow.
People came bid on that can. I was having an auction at that time, and people bid on that can from many different states. And the big Brewery Anna show was coming up, and they all wanted to get that can to have it on display at their booth at the big Brewery Anna show. So it was a hot item. I don't think I've seen those Brewers Badgers six packs, and I don't think it would go for that kind of money. Number one, they're flat cans and they aren't that old. But it does have some value. And of course, maybe the local boosters of the Badgers might have somebody who wants to buy it. It'll probably be worth more as a brewer collectible here, but a beer collectible, who knows?
Yeah, who knows? But could be a little bit of value there, Chris. Good luck.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Nancy in Madison says her great-grandfather was a pastor in Columbia County, and they have some of his books in a fair condition. Are they interest? Are there? Is there any interest to historical society or genealogist? There are also many from the early 1900s in English. So she's, I think, thinking about maybe a historical society or a genealogist.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It depends upon what the books are. And I'm glad she brought this up. A lot of the very early books were religious books. One of the top eight most valuable books ever was the Gutenberg Bible. Now, everybody's family Bible is not worth a lot. You know, people usually don't throw out a Bible. They keep it in the family. You know, to them, it's a sacred book, so they're not going to just throw it out because they don't have room for it. They keep it in the family and pass it down. A lot of them were very ornate in their cover. Just because it's a good-looking book and old doesn't mean it's going to be valuable. And like I said, religious books are among some of the first. The most I've ever sold a Bible for was $1,700, and that one was printed in the 1700s. It was, I want to say, Dutch.
Hmm.
And the reason it went for so much money, it was in two volumes. They were very large books. It had fold-out maps of the places talked about in the Bible. So from the 1700s, what those places looked like then, that's what made that valuable. Not the Bible itself. It was those pull-out maps that were in great condition. They folded out of the pages of the books. And I sold that for a client, I don't know, quite a number of years ago. So religious books don't always do that. Perhaps a seminary of whatever religion the pastor was involved with or the seminary he went to, they have archives. They might be interested in books like that.
I think that's a good idea.
Ancestry, if there were general books about the, you know, the families and stuff, that's what the ancestry places are looking for lack of a better word, those looking for ancestry. Historical societies are looking for books that have information about their area, whether it's the state of Wisconsin or the community, the county, the local area. That's what they look for. So I'm not sure. If there are religious books, I'd go to a seminary or a religious college.
Good advice. Let's go to Duane in Wausau next. Hi, Duane.
Oh, good morning. So my mother-in-law, who's 80, and these were her mother's books that got from her dad, so they were going back in the 18. It's a 15-set edition of the Dickens, you know, and with all the titles in there. I can't find a date, but it's, you know, everything from Pickwick Papers, I mean, Great Expectations, Uncommercial Traveler. There's just, like, some books have a line between two titles, like Tale of Two Cities Sketches, but I can't find like a date in any of them, and they're very fragile. They're green, deep olive green, and they
They would have been published after the last publishing date of the newest book, because all those books had to come before. So we're not talking about first editions here. You're talking about a publication of the works of an author. And generally speaking, they did quite a few of those, and they're not particularly valuable. But again, you might look at some of those websites I mentioned.
Yeah, well, mention that, them again, because I've already forgotten myself, and I did write it down.
Okay, abebooks.com, Alibris, A-L-I-B-R-I-S, good one.
Mm-hmm.
Biblio,
okay.
Bookfinder.
Okay.
Bauman Rare Books.
There we go.
And just locally, I want to mention this. The library, or the UW here in Madison, has a website, library.wisc.edu/special collections. And they have some information on how to find a book, and they might even have a librarian, a reference librarian, that might help on some of the things. So that's a Madison
connection there, yeah.
Right, yeah, information.
Duane, thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. Shirley Bauman, our guest today, as we talk with her about antiques and collectibles, zeroed in a bit on books, but taking other questions as well. She owns Heirloom Appraisal Services. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at antiques and collectibles on the show today with a bit of an emphasis on books, but taking other questions as well, certainly with our guest Shirley Bauman. She owns Heirloom Appraisal Services. Been with us a number of times. Always good to have her back. I think we've got one open line at 800-642-1234, or you could email to ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Nancy in Madison next. Hi, Nancy.
Hey, I have two. I have a book, and then I have a folio of book plates by Owen Grammey, Birds of Wisconsin, and it's a limited edition published for the Milwaukee Museum by the university here in 63. And I have number 88 of 200 copies signed by Owen Grammey. And there are 100 picture book plates in this that are 9 by 12, along with a book. And I have no idea if it has any value or they're beautiful pictures. If anybody,
I have seen that set before, and I have had it come for sale that I helped a client sell that set. And it does have some value, not quite as much as we had hoped. I guess the reason being that there are many, he was such a prolific artist. There are many, many, many Owen Grammys out there. And most of the wildlife organizations, Ducks Unlimited and all the rest of them, have either sold them as fundraisers locally or had them available at their auctions or had a premium on them. So that so many of the collectors of that kind of thing already have them. So that value has gone down because of that. The rarity factor isn't there. Now, there are still collectors of them. They are certainly worth looking into and seeing who's you know, purchasing them today. But you probably aren't going to be somewhere in the $100 range, give or take.
Hmm. Okay, there you go, Nancy. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Janet in Green Bay. Hi, Janet.
Hi, good morning. I am so happy that Shirley is on the show this morning. I have some heirloom linens. They were made in the 1940s. My grandmother and her sisters made a just absolutely stunning crocheted bedspread. They embroidered pillowcases, They embroidered linens for the bedroom dressers, and I have doilies and padding. They are absolutely expertly done. My mother passed them along to me, and she would keep them in the cedar chest to take good care of them. I've checked with the local historic society to see if I can have them put in their museum. However, they are inundated with items like this. So I'm in a quandary as to what to do with them. I don't want them to end up in a pile at the Goodwill store. And I have no one in the family that's interested in taking them. Do you have any ideas of?
Yeah, just as you were saying, the local historical society is inundated with them. I was thinking there's so many of those available. That was a very popular thing to do in the 30s, 40s. That those eras when your ancestors were making them, and so there are a lot of them around. So museums are not going to look for them. However. You know, if you go into some of the antique shops, the crocheted bedspreads sometimes go in the, you know, $85 to $125 value at an antique shop. So there is some value. Again, because you have a lot of them and you need to do that, and you said you have no family members to pass them on to, I would look again for an auctioneer who goes online, sells online, that has a following of people who collect things like, you know, antique items. And that, I think, is where you're going to place them with people who want them and will enjoy them and use them.
Yeah, it's a good idea. So she would just go to one of the perhaps, well, let's see.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of how to search this.
Well, I would recommend someone who is involved with the Wisconsin Auctioneers Association.
Okay.
Because they they're people who will believe in continuing education and learning how to do the best for their clients and that kind of thing. And if something should go wrong, they have a code of ethics that they, you know, abide by. And start searching for antique auction, Wisconsin, in your city, your area, and then find that out, who that auctioneer is that comes up that's having an auction, and, you know, check the listing of the Wisconsin Auctioneers Association and see if they're in there. Look at their auctions to see what they have for sale, and then at the end, what they're, look at the last day towards the end of their auction and see what kind of prices are coming up. That's the way I'd research it.
Good luck, Janet. Thank you for calling. Bob in Fitchburg, on to you now. Hi, Bob.
Hi, good morning. I have a Drexel china cabinet. We're doing some remodeling and getting some new furniture, and so we're going to be getting rid of it, and I was going to just post it for sale on Facebook Marketplace, but when I did a simple search online, I see that there's a lot of different Drexel china cabinets listed for sale, and none of them are less than $1,300, so I'm thinking I need to do a little bit more research here. Can you help me figure out how I would go about valuing this, and then also what would be a good option for me to find someone to help me sell this, or someone who might want to, like a dealer that might want to buy it.
Okay. What you need to do is learn what the style of yours is. I'm suspecting that the ones in those higher values are modern in design, and what is hot right now is mid-century modern furniture. Drexel did some of that kind of furniture built in the 50s, 60s in a modern style. Just because it was built during that time doesn't mean that's valuable. If it's built then and has a colonial style, it won't be popular. So I'm suspecting that you're seeing asking prices for mid-century modern furniture. And that's what you have to determine about the age of yours and if it actually is modern. So start Googling mid-century modern Drexel china cabinet and see if any of them look like yours.
Yeah.
And that's will tell you if they're if it's not that, then you know china cabinets are hard to sell right now. Younger people aren't buying china like they used to. Not everybody who gets married is going out to the, you know, pick out their wedding china that everybody gives them, you know, place settings for. So that's not important to young people anymore. So without china, they don't need a china cabinet. Right? So it's hard. If it's not something like the mid-century modern, it's probably going to be, I don't know, not seeing it, it might be $200, $250, something like that. If it is one of the modern designs in mid-century, then you can go into those higher prices. How would you sell it again? Marketplace is not bad. You don't have to do moving that way. If you're willing to have people come and look at it, you could also, again, talk to an auctioneer that specializes in that kind of thing. Most auctioneers are happy to get mid-century modern right now because it's bringing good prices. And, of course, they have the ability to move items that not everybody has, you know, at home. They don't have a truck or a van that's big enough for that kind of thing or want to do that. So that's the way I do it. First, do your good research to figure out what you have, and that'll determine how much further you want to go.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. Paul in Wausau, your turn. Hi, Paul.
Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I have my grandmother, as a child, came over on a ship from Norway as an immigrant back in the 1880s. We dug out of the attic years ago the original chest. You know, they had trunks or chests where they stored all their personal items on, when they came over on the ship.
Sure.
We had this chest restored a number of years ago by an antique dealer. What would that be worth today?
Well, there's a couple of things in what you said. First of all, I don't know the date they came over. We're probably talking the 1800s.
1880s, I think.
Oh, 1880s, you said, yeah. And that's, you know, well over 100 years old right now. So it's what we would call truly an antique. Condition makes a big difference. The ones that are most valuable have the original condition, and yours is restored. So that makes a big difference in it. If you had called me before that, I would have said, don't restore it. I would have left the old paint. That's what collectors like. But we can't undo that. It's already done. These kinds of things have gone down a bit because people aren't decorating in the primitive style anymore like they had been for a while when they were really high. And again, I don't know how elaborate the painting might be on it, if it's just a coat of paint, if it has a date. Some of them have, you know, floral designs and names and all that kind of thing on it. So that makes a big difference. But they, you know, don't go for an awful lot right now, usually between, depending on condition and how elaborate they are, again, size on that, of course, matters a bit. You know, it could be anywhere, 125 to maybe 350 these days. I don't see them go that much more than that, and especially with your repainted restoration on there. Interesting side note about that, if it has a flat, the immigrants, a lot of them like to come with the curved top or humpback trunks because that trunk would be set on top because nothing could rest on the lid. So if it's a flat top, it was likely in the stack. If it was the hump top, it was on the top of the pile and didn't get things packed on top of it.
So there you go. Well, Shirley Bauman, our guest today, she is a certified personal property appraiser. She's the owner of Heirloom Appraisal Services. And We've got about another minute here to go before our break. I did want to mention one other thing. Shirley, you mentioned the dishware and the old dishware. And one of the best pieces of advice you gave me one time, or gave someone else, but I heard it too, was when you've got dishes like that, you need to use them. Put them in the dishwasher, even if they're not supposed to be put in a dishwasher. Just go ahead and use them, and don't even worry about it, and you're going to be just fine with that. I think that's about the best advice that you could get. And I had some old dishware that I had not been using because I didn't want to hand wash it always. And I went ahead and used the dishwasher anyway. And you know what? It didn't really seem to make that much difference. Well, we're going to take a quick look at the news, find out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. And then we will be back with Shirley Bauman. You stay with us. You can call in 800-642-1234. Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at antiques and collectibles today with our guest Shirley Bauman, certified personal property appraiser and owner of Heirloom Appraisal Services. The lines are all filled, and you could email us, though, ideas@wpr.org. The number, when it ever comes back up, will be 800-642-1234. And let's take a call. Dennis in Sparta, thanks for waiting. What's on your mind?
Good afternoon. I have a interesting book that I purchased quite a few years ago. The name of it is Waubun. It's The Early Days of the Northwest by Mrs. John Kinsey, and it was published in 1856. And she was apparently the first, one of the first settlers in Chicago, because there's an etching of her house. It says the first house built in Chicago, but this was put into the book in 1856. Just wondering if it has any value. The second page also just says that it was entered into Congress in the year 1856.
What do you think, Shirley? Do we lose Shirley? Oh, we may have lost her for a minute here. We will take. Tell you what, Dennis, we will have you stay on the line here, and we'll see if we can get her. We're having little gremlins are getting into the woodwork here. So we're going to have to see if we can get her back. And I'm hoping that we're going to be able to do that as we talk with her. And I think we're getting her back. One of the things I could mention while we're waiting for that to happen is our sports show tomorrow, taking a look at track and field on the show to begin the show tomorrow. And then we're going to be going to the Masters Golf Tournament, or at least not to the Masters Golf Tournament, but to the author of a book on the Masters Golf Tournament. The Masters Golf Tournament, of course, is on. Actually, I think they opened kind of for business today. And the tournament itself, of course, will run from Thursday through Sunday, where they will be picking some. Well, they won't be picking, but a winner will erupt from the group, and so we'll talk about kind of the history of the Masters Golf Tournament. It's got a really interesting history to its just getting started. It was, and I'm trying to remember now, Bobby Jones was the golfer of the time. He was an amateur golfer, but he had won. He had won many, many, many tournaments, and he got together with, but he was retiring, and so he got together with a number of people to get the course built. And there were a lot of problems, but he wanted one close to home, close to where he lived, and so they found this property in Augusta, and we'll be able to get more information tomorrow on the program about that. But right now we're looking at antiques and collectibles. I believe we have Shirley. Are you back with us?
I am.
All right. Well,
I don't know what happened, but here I am.
I don't know if you heard Dennison's from Sparta with his question.
I did, and I think he does have a book that's worth looking into. And I would put it on one of those sites that I mentioned, like ADE Books or some of those, Libris, Biblio, and get some information on that. The if a book is the first or the first comprehensive book on a specific subject, that sometimes makes it more valuable. If you look at like Audubon, I have books on my shelf about American birds of North America, but Audubon was the first, and of course he had the beautiful illustrations. This book might be a first on that topic. I'm not sure. I'm not familiar with that. And also the fact that she was an historic figure around Chicago. Again, it might make it more valuable in the Chicago or Midwestern market than anywhere else. So I would do some investigation, like on those websites I mentioned, and you might be surprised what you find out about that. If that doesn't give you any information, you might contact one of the larger Chicago auction houses. Leslie Hindman, Susannan's, one of those houses in Chicago might be interested if you're interested in selling it. I don't know about that. But they might have some information for you.
Yeah, that's a good. So Leslie, did you say, in Chicago?
Yes. Leslie Hindman, H-I-N-D-M-A-N. I think it's only one N, Leslie Hindman. And they have a branch of their auction facility in Milwaukee as well, but they are based out of Chicago.
There we go. Dennis, good luck. Thank you. Jane in Duluth, Minnesota, on to you now. Hi, Jane.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling about a Victorian or possibly Edwardian curios, they're called. My mother was an antique dealer, and I was introduced to stuff early on, and I've had this since I was like maybe 10. I'm not going to tell you how old I am now, but it's old. It was pretty old when she gave it. There were flea circuses back then that they did, and this is a flea shadow box. There's a bride and a groom in it, and I have verified that they are fleas, and they're in a wedding garb, and it's about the size of my thumbnail, and it's in a tiny box within a box. That's how they packaged them back then. And I have the original cotton and everything that this little tiny shadow box sits in. And I cannot find out what they're called. I don't really care. It might be worth something, but I just want to know more about it. I can't track. I Googled it around and upside down for years, and I just can't find anything out about the curios. Huh.
Yeah. What do you think, Shirley?
Okay. Well, that is very much a specialty item. And I put something on. I'm seeing some flea circus items that have sold at auction from one of my databases that I use. And we're looking at things that are not going particularly high, but the flea circuses, well, I shouldn't say that. In 2021, I see one that was pretty elaborate, and it was in a suitcase. That was $1,800. Of course, it's not the bride and groom. Another one, like cigar box size. They're in cigar boxes for $900, $600 in 2019. So they're they can have some value. I don't know about one with bride and groom. Let me put that in here.
Take a look, huh?
Yeah, real quick. Nope, I didn't come up with anything. So that's going to be, I would guess it would make it a little more rare than the standard flea circus. I don't have, you know, I don't have a lot of information on that. That's not something I've ever handled. But I do searching with flea circus and then try the bride and groom in there, or even flea bride and groom. But I think you could have something worth, you know, if it's in real good condition, of course, worth, you know, a few hundred dollars.
Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah.
There you go, Jane. Thank you. Jason in DeSoto, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. Yeah, I have a piece of flow copper that my grandfather had found in his farm field, and it's 60 pounds. And I was just curious on about, you know, at $3 a pound, it's scrap, it's worth $200. So just curious on what it would be worth, you know, whole, you know, like that.
Yeah.
What kind of copper did you say it was?
Flow.
I called it flow copper. It's something you find in the ground. You know, the farmers find them mostly.
Oh. Okay.
A big chunk, 60-pound chunk of copper.
That's pretty
well,
cool.
Yeah, it is. And mostly I would think it does have the copper value. I'm not sure of a market offhand for that as a collectible. I've only had the experience with, like, copper cookware or, you know, old copper items they use to cook over the fire, or, you know, fish cookers, that kind of thing. Not just a chunk.
I wonder if a geology museum...
Yeah, there you go.
Would have an interest in something like that. That'd be worth, and there are a few in the state.
Sure. There's one at UW in Madison. There's one at the UW in Stevens Point. Yeah. I'm not sure where else.
Well, if you typed in UW Geology Museums, or Geology Museums, Wisconsin, you're going to get them all, because I think there's... There may be one in La Crosse, too. But that would be where I'd take a look that way first, Jason, if it was me. Because I think you're right, Shirley. It would, the collectible part of it would, I mean, if you had a geology museum, it'd be kind of cool to have something like that. And you know right where it came from and everything. So there you go. Good luck, Jason. Thank you. John in Mason, your turn. Hi, John.
Hi. I am, my most prized possession is Heroes of the Final Frontier Star Trek autographed framed picture of the entire original cast, from Spock to Kirk, Bones, all of them. And it came with a certificate of authenticity. I ordered it from QVC back in the 80s.
Okay.
And I've been trying, I would never want to part with it, but I've always been wondering what it would be worth now, because James Doohan, Leonard Nimoy, and DeForest Kelly are all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And they all signed it?
All the original cast members signed it.
Ooh. Star Trek fans would be interested in that, I would think, Shirley.
Absolutely. And there are a number of auction houses, especially on the West Coast, that do auctions of those kinds of things. Movie memorabilia is the movie or television memorabilia. I go with movie because, mm-hmm. you know, they did a lot of movies. And you want to look at that. And Julian's Auction House is one of them out in L.A. That's really well known. But some of those that handle that kind of thing should have, you should be able to go on there and search for some results of what those kinds of things have sold for. Now, if QVC produced it or made it available, it's around. It's something that they, you know, I would say you've probably got good authenticity for it. But again, if it turns out to be something really valuable, they'll want to authenticate it. But that's where I would look. Some of these auction houses that do auctions of movie memorabilia. There's also a woman who does a lot of movie memorabilia on the Antiques Roadshow. And I can't recall her name right off, but I know she's done some Star Trek things. So you might search the archives of Antiques Roadshow memorabilia. You know, they have the archives on there, and I'd use, you know, a sci-fi movie memorabilia, something like
or
that.
TV.
TV for, you know, sci-fi. And I know she's done some for some Star Trek.
For some Star Trek. All right. There you go, John. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's take another call. Irvin and Burnett will go to you next. Hi, Irvin. Thanks for calling.
Hello. Hello.
Hi.
Yes, I have two old convex portraits that are done with convex glass on them. They were done by the Chicago Portrait Company. The frames have numbers on them, and they're very ornate. They're about 13 inches wide and maybe 16 inches high, with the old red cord that you hung them from by the ceiling track with the tassels. They're from my grandparents. They're from about 1910.
Okay.
The reason I know that is because one of them is with their three children that drowned in 1911.
Okay.
I was wondering if there was any value to them.
There is some value to them. Did you, what did you say about the glass? Were they curved glass?
Yeah, they're a convex portrait.
Convex glass, yeah.
And a convex glass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of them that I have had over the past years, when I've done estate sales and auctions and things, those kinds of frames in good condition have been selling around the $70, $85 range each. They're not as popular as they once were, but again, they have to be in real good condition. That whole Victorian kind of decorating has gone out of favor right now. I suspect it'll come back again, but that's about what I have sold them for in the past.
All right. There you go, Urban. Thank you for calling. Jim in Boston, your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Shirley and Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I used to, I helped start up a collector publication years ago, and I used to travel to all the collector sites around the country that you do see on the Antique Roadshow. At one, I picked up a jackknife, and I got it for a couple bucks. But I took it over to a knife dealer at the time, and he told me it was made prior to 1750. It was made from a cow horn, and there were pits in the cow horn that he said had been eradicated prior to 1750. But and the name of the maker was on the blade. It was Ricardo. And I've tried to search and see if there's anything like that on the internet. I haven't found anything manufactured or made by that knife maker. I'm just wondering where I might look for it or have the value authenticated. He told me at the time it was probably worth about $1,200.
Okay. Ricardo doesn't ring a bell with me as a knife maker. And I'm just pulling this up. Nope, and I'm not finding anything. Yeah, It looks like it might be Gerber, Ricardo.
Oh, Ricardo.
Yeah, Gerber, Ricardo. That's a newer one, but here's an older one. I forgot.
The hard one, for
try
sure.
Try the term Damascus knife. That's one thing. I don't know if that will give you anything, but...
at least worth a try.
Ricardo is a maker, but I'm not familiar with him on my own, and I see one that says Gerber Ricardo, who was actually, I think, a designer, so it might not be applicable to yours. They did make a lot of horn handle knives back in the day, and I would think if you needed to do this, if you kept researching and found out that you thought it really was worth it, you might be able to contact Forest Products Lab and see if they can help you at all with that horn.
Oh. That might be worth a look for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
Jim, good luck. Appreciate your call. William emailed to ask, if you were starting today, what would you collect for tomorrow?
Oh, my goodness. That is such a tough thing. I always recommend people collect something they're interested in. that's what makes it fun. That's what makes it a great hobby. As far as collecting for antique value, I don't know that you can predict that. You know, fine art seems to hold its value, quality fine art, for a long time. But again, that's also a market and goes up and down. So I'm not sure what I would do, but I would look at something I really loved. Advertising that's something that continues to evolve. And I think that might be why it holds its value and interest for a long time, because when you combine the different eras, historical eras, advertising, you can really see a change and a pattern. So that might be something. But, of course, now we're going to a lot of digital advertising and online things that, you know, might be a whole different animal coming up soon.
Shirley, thanks so much for taking time to be with us today. I'm glad we finally got all of the bugs out of our system here.
Yeah.
Appreciate it very much. Shirley Bauman, our guest, certified personal property appraiser. She's the owner of Heirloom Appraisal Services. Well, just taking a look tomorrow, I did mention this already. I'll just mention it once more. Our monthly sports show, we'll take a look at track and field, and then we will take a look at the Masters Golf Tournament. So I hope you'll join us for that. But in the meantime, stay with us. Lots in store on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.